tool calling improving, as Chris was saying, we're not going to see hundreds of tools. We're going to see thousands or tens of thousands. And there's a lot of opportunity for continuous improvement in just the ecosystem alone. And I think we're going to see a lot more substantial improvements in all these areas outside of just the raw model performance that are going to get us closer to that wow AGI moment.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Mixture of Experts. I am Brian Casey, your default host for bonus episodes. As some of you may have noticed, it's been a big week in AI this week. We actually recorded earlier this week covering some of the big announcements around GPT OSS and Genie 3. And then it became very clear that after we had recorded that GPT-5 was going to drop on Thursday. So we made the decision just to release that episode on Wednesday, so it was still timely, and then come back to you today with a discussion around reactions and thoughts on the GPT-5 release. So I'm joined today by Chris Hay, CTO of Customer Transformation, and Mihai Crivetti, Distinguished Engineer of Agentic AI. And we are going to get into a discussion of the GPT-5 release, early reactions to it, thoughts on coding. And maybe that's actually a good place to start with the opening question today. One of the big questions coming into this release was, is GPT-5 going to replace Claude as the daily driver for developers all over the world? And so while we can't speak for everybody, we can share our own opinions on that. And so maybe I'll start with you, Chris. Early reactions of, like, do you think GPT-5 is going to be replacing Claude for you as a daily driver?
No. Sadly, I had high hopes, but no.
Mihai?
You know, it's kind of funny. I was refreshing my ChatGPT all night, and somewhere around 1 or 2 a.m., I got access to it. So I got out of bed. I rushed my machine, and I was working all night, trying out prompts, trying it with different tools, trying it with MCP. And in the morning, I had to start my day job, and I said, all right, back to Claude. And I found myself using Claude Code and Opus 4.1 again. I think it's an amazing model, but right now it's not replacing it yet for me.
All right. Well, I think that sets the stage really nicely for some of the drama, because there's always drama in the AI industry. So with that, we'll get into today's episode. And I'll start by maybe just doing a quick recap. I'm sure many of you have seen the news already, but I'll just go through for those of you who might not have. On Thursday afternoon, OpenAI did a live stream where they introduced the new GPT-5 series. There are three models that were part of that, which was the core kind of GPT-5 model, a mini, a nano. There are thinking and pro modes available across a number of the various free tiers with, or pricing tiers with, different sort of rate limits associated with them. And going through the release, there were three main things that I think stuck out to me and stuck out to most of the market. So first of all, was the introduction of this model router. I think one of the memes on the internet has been how complicated it has been to, like, go into the model selector in ChatGPT and just, like, figure out what model you're supposed to use for anything. And it had gotten incredibly complex. And OpenAI has been talking about needing to solve that and making that simpler for months at this point. And consolidating everything to the one brand family around GPT-5 with a model router in front of it was their way of delivering against that. The second piece was that there are improvements in benchmarks, so it does look like it's a smarter model. It is not, like, earth-shatteringly more intelligent than the other models that are on the market. And that makes it a little bit different, I think, from other, like, model releases of this nature, is that the improvements in the benchmarks is maybe not the highlight, but there are improvements there. But where we're seeing even more improvements is actually in reliability. And some of the most important benchmarks that they introduced were actually around reductions in hallucinations. So the idea that you can actually trust these models more for work that you're doing day to day. And then finally, which I should think was a surprising, in the same way that reliability was almost a surprising theme, price, I think, was a very surprising theme as part of this. Like, typically when you think about state-of-the-art models, the thing that you're thinking about, or state-of-the-art technology, you typically associate that with pricing power. But actually, one of the big takeaways for me, at least, was actually accessibility and the reaction in the market, particularly when we're looking at the API pricing. These models, all three of them, are very competitively priced and, you know, is in some ways starting to deliver on that, like, too cheap to meter slogan that I think we've heard. So those were some of the big highlights. And then also this consolidates many of the existing models that exist, starting with ChatGPT and kind of the UI. And I think over time that will come more, it will come to the API as well. But that's kind of a quick summary of the release. Maybe just to start with other general reactions, we'll get specifically into the coding piece here in a minute. But maybe I'll start with Mihai. Beyond just the kind of like the quick highlights, I'm curious of like what else stuck out to you about this release, what's important, and just any kind of general reactions you have.
I think what stuck with me this release is how good this model seems to be at tool invocation and calling for AI agents. I think you can really see the results of fine-tuning to specific things like MCP and tool invocation and function calling and structured outputs. And I think it's a lot more reliable than previous models we've used, at least compared to, you know, GPT-4o or even some of their previous reasoning models. And it does so at a cost which seems sustainable for using for this type of, I would say, agentic workloads.
I think I'm tempted to go into the ChatGPT interface and talk about that for a second. But actually, if I think about the APIs for a second, I kind of like what they've done there, right? So back to your point, we want to talk about big end models, but those smaller models are killer to Mihai's point, right? So especially the nano model, that little nano model on the API outperforms most of the large models in the market. And especially for agentic, as Mihai was saying, and function calling, it just gets it right. So most of the time you'd be like, oh, I'm going to go to a mini model or I'm going to go to the full fat model. I don't know if you're meant to call that. Should we size things like Coca-Cola? But Diet GPT-5 is just killing it, and GPT-5 Lite, they are just absolutely killing it. So no, I'm really impressed with the nano model and the agentic. The other one, and maybe we'll do the demo a little bit later, Brian, is the browser control is really good, and it's logic and reasoning back to the sort of ChatGPT interface. So one of the things I like to do with models is taunt them with games. It's one of my fun things. And definitely none of the earlier versions of GPT was ever able to solve the Myrtle game. I don't know if you've played Myrtle before. It's kind of like it's this detective guy and you've got to figure out who killed the murderer, who killed the person, who was the murderer, with what weapon and what location. And it never worked. It never got it right. It was always getting things wrong. And so today I sort of played it against the Myrtle game. On the agent browser, it took 20 minutes to play the game, but it got it. It solved the murder. And no earlier version was able to do that. So I think they've really focused on the planning, the logic, the reasoning. So there's been a huge emphasis on that as well. And I think I appreciate that. It does have the ability to cheat. The second version was great. The first time it played Myrtle, it played for 10 minutes and then it looked up the answer on the internet. So my second prompt was like, don't look up the answers, don't cheat. But you know, fabulous, fabulous model.
I'm glad you mentioned that 20-minute time span, because one of the other things that I just saw people most encouraged about on the internet was there's some of these charts that just show just the consistent curve of being able to successfully complete longer time horizon tasks. And that is, you know, I don't know if I want to lump that into the same sort of space as reliability, because it does feel like a little bit adjacent to that. But that was another aspect that I think people were pretty excited about. I'm curious if you got, like, if this is what you both like expected from this release. It gets kind of into the realm of predictions, but I think one of the interesting things just gauging the market's response to this is either the night before the release or 2 days before that, Sam Altman posted the Death Star on Twitter, which I think like sent everyone into kind of like a little bit of a frenzy. Like, their OpenAI is kind of known for this sort of vague posting thing that they do on Twitter where they, you know, really hype these model releases. And then what's interesting, it came out and it's just this like very strong focus on just like straight utility in a lot of ways. And there had been some early kind of rumors and reports about like that the focus was going to be on things like hallucinations. But like when you think about what you were looking or expecting OpenAI to do around GPT-5, is this kind of like in line with what you were expecting in terms of like the trajectory in this space? Or was this in any way kind of surprising in terms of where they ended up focusing?
I didn't find it very surprising just because they've released GPT-OSS before. And I've been playing around with that. And this feels very much in line with the same kind of design, the same kind of style. And I expected more of a GPT 5.0 kind of a release, just because it was time. Also from my own personal experience of using some of the O3 models, O3 Pro, I didn't find them to be that useful for general purpose tasks. I found that they took way too long to accomplish a task. They were prone to overthinking. They were prone to coming in with very strange formatting and even formatting issues. And the way I'm seeing at least this model release is as a fix to that with a unified architecture that kind of gives you, again, the core capability, that wow moment we all had when we first picked up GPT-4.0.
Yeah, I sort of agree with you, but I think maybe we're a little too used to playing with different models, Mihai, in my opinion, right? Where we'll soon play with Gemini, we'll play with big models, small models, O3s, O4 minis, but the pro versions, we'll play with Claude, etc. You know, we switch between a lot of models. I think if you're not in that world, I think this is going to feel like an incredible model, right? Because, you know, let's be honest. I mean, we'll come back to coding for a second. The front end capabilities that they've got and the ability to create good user interfaces with React code is significantly better than the earlier versions. Now, we would argue and say, well, actually, Claude has been doing that fine. But the reality is that, you know, the GPT models didn't generate good user interfaces, et cetera. They weren't great at generating end-to-end applications. And I think there's been a huge focus on that. So I think there's probably less than a surprise there. But if you can imagine the average user for a second, you know, this is all, that's your point. It's super cheap. It's like the $200 version. You can just generate whatever you want. I think this is a game changer for most people. We're probably just being a little critical in that sense. But I think there is probably a few other things there that, you know, to compare that to the GPT OSS model. I mean, the reality is this one is multimodal. It is doing audio. It is doing images, etc. We're not selecting different models. Come back to the agentic capabilities. The agentic capabilities are great. And then to your point, I mean, coming back to the APIs, so some of the things I appreciate in the back end is how they've handled the grammar and stuff. So I can actually start providing my own grammar for function calls and be able to guide the structure that I want back. So I actually think some of the things that they've done there solves a lot of our kind of pain points. So would I have wanted the model where I just say, I am thinking this, I'm going to sleep, and 20 minutes later, you're going to have created the world? Of course we all want that. But is that a reality? Probably not. But does this level up everybody, right? Remember, 700 million users on this compared to the number of people on Claude? It's a huge level up. So I think we're just maybe tuning in the weeds.
Yeah, it's funny because when I looked at, there's a few things on Twitter where people were having just like what felt like small seances saying goodbye to some of the old models that they no longer get to talk to anymore. So there was like a feeling of a little loss. But it's like, it is such a specific community that feels that sort of way. And like 99% of the world is just totally overwhelmed by all that complexity. So I think, you know, delivering something that is much more accessible to the masses makes a ton of sense. I'm just still thinking about kind of the dichotomy and reactions in the market where your point of just like, I would love to tell the model to do something and wake up 20 minutes later and like, you know, it's created a world-changing sort of application. One of the reactions I saw in the market is that this kind of confirmed that people believed that the march to the intelligence explosion, AGI, ASI, whatever you want to say, is going to be more of a slog. It's not going to be, you're not just going to wake up one day and there's going to be, you know, we're magically there. And it could also be the case that, you know, it's actually not going to be maybe just one giant model to rule them all. But like when I think about this compared to like Genie 3, it's like those feel like pretty different, you know, approaches. Even I think the discussion we'll get to around coding, like it still feels like there's plenty of room for Claude in this. And so, you know, maybe as a last question before we just dive into the code is like, did this release update any of your thinking at all around the trajectory to some of like the bigger topics in the industry around AGI, ASI, intelligence explosion? Did it, You know, some people seemed to think it was a little bit of a wet blanket on that. Other people felt like we were kind of right on target. But, you know, where I'm curious where you guys come down on this, and maybe start with Chris.
I think actually, probably, I know this is going to sound odd, but I think the GPT OSS model probably hit me more of that because we got to see some of the underlying architecture more. And then I can kind of project forward what's going on and in the larger models. I think there is a few things that are as key. So the first one is, I know I say the words agents all of the time, but I really think agents is the big way through this. And one of the things that I noticed on the GPT OSS models is that in the analysis channel, so if you think of the thinking mode for a second and the response API, when it's doing thinking, they hit off a reasoning, the analysis channel is the first token. And then basically all the tokens go into the analysis channel. That's where it does the thinking. And then it will create a new token and then to say this is the final response. So that's kind of what happens in the back end from a kind of a next token prediction, right? So all of that thinking happens in this channel. But if you look at some of the system prompts in the GPT OSS code base, you will see things like when you're in the analysis channel, if you're going to do math or things like that, go use your Python tool, but don't tell the user, right? Just do the calculation and the thinking, but you don't need to tell us about it. So what we're seeing here is tool use. So there's two types of tool use that's going on. There's tool use that you are going to say, here's my function call, go call this thing on the outside. But there's a set of tools that are going to be used by the models themselves to get around things like, being able to do math calls, et cetera. So there's a whole level of experimentation that I've been going through. Is like, what's this? Multiply by this. And then I'm like, don't use a tool in the analysis channel to try and see how much that's doing that. And I think this sort of embedding of tools into the thinking in the model to be able to back down a little things and reduce the hallucinations and have more accurate answers. I can see that expanding out. I can see that expanding out into, hundreds or thousands of tools in the future, right? So I think that's one direction that I'm probably seeing. Then the other thing is, and it's great that we're on this podcast, is the whole mixture of expert thing, right? So when we look at the GPT OSS model, what you're seeing is a lot of expert, right? So maybe there's four active experts, but the number of total experts in these models is huge. It was like 32 experts. I think the larger one was like 100 odd experts or something like that. So what they're doing here is just expanding out the number of experts that are part of this model with much, much smaller number of parameters per expert, which makes sense because then you can really speed tokens through the model, because guess what's important to us? We're not prepared to wait for the model to come back with answers. And when it's a big model, you're having to wait for it to go through the layers to churn out those tokens. And as we as human beings, we're like, no, I'm not waiting. So I think this push towards much smaller models, which are much more distributed, and I think that's going to continue to AGI. And then all I imagine that's probably happening in the GPT-5 era models is they're probably still got those smaller petitions there. But I imagine for some of the hard thinking, they've just gone to larger parameters on some of those bigger models. So I think there's a lot of clues of how we're going to get there.
Yeah, and I think this can also pull the AGI timeline forward by speeding experimentation, especially with the GPT OSS release. I think there's a lot of dimensions in which these models can improve, not just raw performance. I think one I'm really thrilled about is inference cost. And that gives you the opportunity to make things work in different ways. So you can just hit hundreds of these requests at different tools and then summarize those results. There's also inference speed, and this is also kind of dictated by hardware, but also by having smaller models and more efficient models. If you have inference speed, and I'm seeing this with the GPT OSS, it's running at 180 tokens on my single GPU. And that's impressive. You can really hit hundreds of these requests in parallel. And with tool calling improving, as Chris was saying, we're not going to see hundreds of tools. We're going to see thousands or tens of thousands. And there's a lot of opportunity for continuous improvement in just the ecosystem alone. And even the user interfaces, most of the consumers are using, what was it, Chris, 700 million, are using ChatGPT through a ChatGPT UI. And one of the reasons I love Claude is because I find its UI to be superior in handling things like artifacts, handling things like projects, and how it's using its quote-unquote canvas versus the way ChatGPT was using it. And now this is leading to improvements in the user interface aspect as well. And I think we're going to see a lot more substantial improvements in all these areas outside of just the raw model performance that are going to get us closer to that wow AGI moment.
And I think that's actually pretty consistent with some of, I feel like there was some fair amount of folks who were like, I don't know, maybe they're like AGI now. And this was like, oh, this is not AGI. But the, like all of these underlying, like the reliability, the tool calling, like all of these feel like prereqs to actually getting there. And then making progress on, I think those dimensions will end up being like very obviously a major part of the story. And all right, for our next segment, where as we talk about code, we're actually going to, for one of the first times on the show, actually do some live demos. And so if you're listening along on audio and you actually want to see some of what's going on the screen, and I promise you for at least one of these segments, you're going to want to see some of the beautiful artwork that's on display. Head over to the IBM Technology YouTube channel where you can see some of this stuff live. You know, with that, I want to get to our last segment, which is, I think for as impressive and exciting as some of these announcements are, for as much as I think it'll make an impact on hundreds of millions of people who use these tools, one of the big themes, it's in the blog post, it's like one of the most talked about, parts of the release on basically every forum is, you know, for as much as OpenAI has done in this space, like Claude and Anthropic have, continued to just be the leader in kind of the coding area. And there was the question of like, will this be the release that puts them over the top and gets them there? And based on the initial question, it sounded like for both of you, the answer to that, at least right now, is not quite yet. And so, you know, maybe starting with Mihai just on this one, but, you know, what for you, like, how far did it get? Like, did it get close? And like, why didn't it get all the way? What are still the difference makers? You said you're like, okay, time to go back to my day job. I'm going back to, you know, Claude at this point. You know, why? What were the big differences for you that you still feel like, you know, Anthropic has an advantage in this space?
I think first, I want to define how I typically work with these models. I don't work with just one model. I actually use them at the same time in parallel. When Claude is busy doing something useful for me, I might fire up, I would say, ChatGPT, or I might fire up some other model or Gemini to do some deep research, and I kind of have them all working in parallel while one is busy doing something. But I give them different tasks. And I was hoping that for my typical day-to-day workflow where I'm using things like Claude Code, for example, or projects in Claude with Opus to give it hard problems to solve, to ask for unit test case creation in a way which is consistent with my code base, that the new models and the new experience I have with ChatGPT would be able to pick that up seamlessly. And I still find that, at least for me, ChatGPT struggles while Opus is still able to deliver those use cases. So let me jump into a very quick screenshot to show one of these workflows live. So here you'll see that I've got four windows side by side, which kind of replicates my real working environment. I've got different things. I've got Continue and I've got Klein, but I use multiple models. So here you can see, for example, I've got GPT OSS running on my machine. It thought for 25 seconds and it came back with a complex mermaid diagram. I'm going to pick it up. I'm going to paste it in Mermaid. And as you can see, it actually worked. First, one shot gave me the results I need. I'm going to do the same thing live with GPT-4. And I've tried the same thing with Claude. As you've seen Claude before, Claude gave me, again, first time, a great diagram. I'm getting similar things from even the OSS model. With GPT-5, let me try that again. It's actually not answering. Maybe got slightly intimidated. Let me try it in your chat again. Let's create a complex diagram. Yeah, I think I've intimidated it with the benchmark. But the experience I've had is that I have to try maybe two or three times, take the error I get from the Mermaid renderer, give it back to the ChatGPT UI, and it'll try again and again before I get one of those things. And with Claude Code, and Claude seems to handle those things a lot more gracefully behind the scenes, and he's able to give me that experience the first time. And he's able to deal with, for example, continuing large code bases in a way that ChatGPT does not. or in a way that OpenAI models don't seem to at this point. Again, the difference is minuscule, but if you're working with very large code bases or if your code files exceed those, you know, 1,000 lines of code where models tend to struggle, I find Opus still to be the superior model.
Chris, your thoughts?
I would agree. In fact, I'm going to jump to my demo, which is way more enterprise-y than Mihai's one. But I think it will help. I think it will help sort of back up what Mihai's saying in this sense. So I am going to apologize right now for what I am going to show our wonderful audience. So I'm going to share my screen. And here is my best test in the world. So it's my test for everything where I like to create donkeys. And what I want the donkey to do is...
We have custom evals on the Mixture of Experts podcast and their donkeys.
Yep. My donkey has to blink in time with an internet clock per second. And actually, it blinks. It should blink in time with the clock. Now, don't get me wrong, and it should be internet synced and then fall backward. What I actually really appreciate about this, I mean, this is the code it generated. I think the code's pretty good, actually. And this is probably quite a bit of a change from before, where it used to generate terrible code, but actually, I think the code is pretty good. But let's just run that one more time, you know. But this is quite nice in their canvas area that it will go off to the internet, whereas Claude, etc., doesn't. Now, you know, we're all feeling good at the moment. We've got my blinking donkey. But I'm going to show you the problems in a second. Before we do this, this is Claude Sonnet in a sense. So it's blinking donkey. I don't know what's going on with the tail there, to be honest. But it's fine. It's blinking, etc. This is Opus. I quite like this. I still don't know what's going on there. But this is Opus 4.1. So you know, we're probably feeling pretty good now. Now, to show the frustration, I think this highlights the difference here. So in this case, I decided I was going to go to GPT-5 Pro. So I wanted to get the best donkey that I could possibly get. It thought about it for 7 minutes, 7 seconds. But there's all the plan, etc. associated with it. But the problem is it didn't put it on the canvas. So that is not what happened there. It said, save this as a donkey HTML. So even though I'm using Pro at this point, it refused to put it on the canvas. Now look at the size of this text. It's quite big, right? So we're all feeling pretty good. This is going to be a quality donkey. That's our donkey. And it's even got an ear wiggle in there. So it does it every minute. And I said, put it in the canvas. And I asked Pro to do it, right? I just put this in the canvas, and it took 8 minutes, and then it went, you got it, here's a pure canvas version. And you're like, huh, that's not what I wanted. I wanted it over here. And so it didn't help. So I then switched it back to ChatGPT regular. So I changed the model to ChatGPT-5 there, and I said, put it in the canvas. And then it went, I put your blinking donkey into canvas, blah blah blah. If I were to show you the version that it created, it's down here somewhere. Let's see if we can find the code. You can see here we go. Best Donkey Canvas. It was like, that's an earlier version. Anyway, I can't find it. It's an earlier version. It was like a tenth of the code. So you will see I then came back and said, No, do it properly. You see, I said the words don't admit, because actually what happened in that particular version, it just went, and here's the rest of the donkey. Do you know what I mean? I was like, no, I don't want the rest of the donkey. You know, it's the old trick, the problem that you have with ChatGPT. It just starts cutting things out and says, rest of your code goes here. So I wrote, don't admit. And then I said, here's the full version. You know, give me this so it's ready to run. And then eventually, so I'm copy and paste code back in, and then eventually it gave me this version, which run there. But you can see that took 25, 30 minutes to produce this donkey. And most of the time, it's me going, don't admit, put it in the canvas over here, etc. Now, that's probably not the best workflow in the world in that sense, but I'm trying to prove a point, and the point is that Claude just gets it with your artifacts, right? It will remember what you did. It'll update it and it will just work. And then it won't emit code, but ChatGPT still got this code emission. Now, this is not a model problem. I think this is more of a user experience problem, but it's still, and it's probably a kind of cost optimization problem, but it's still enough frustrating for me that if it can't keep track of the artifacts, and it does the same kind of in APIs as well, then it's just going to push me back into Claude because I don't want it sort of skipping stuff. So that for me was the major frustration behind the model. But code-wise and capability-wise, they are very, very close.
Strong world model around donkeys. So for our audio-only listeners out there, I will say that the last donkey we were looking at was aesthetically, from my perspective, the best donkey in there. So I was impressed with that. But perhaps, and even the code, as you were mentioning, I think solid code, but like not quite there just from a workflow, ease of use, straight developer productivity, sort of vibe. And, you know, I think based on what I saw, like there was a lot of that sort of reaction on the internet, which was like, this is really impressive. I like what they're doing a lot. Still going to use Claude probably on this. And so... but I do think it's always great that there's a ton of competition and innovation in this space, because it means we'll just continue to get, you know, better and better things to work with. Go ahead, Chris.
But to your point, the front end code and the experience and the gloss, I think, is better now. It is definitely better in GPT-5. They just need to sort out that developer experience and the token optimization. They're just stop doing this. I pay my $200. I want to cancel my Claude subscription. I don't want to be paying $280. I want to come down to the 200. So just do that and save me some money.
We're all going broke, having to pay for 10 of these things at the same time. So, Chris, Mihai, thank you for joining today. Any final thoughts before we let the audience go and send them on their way to, you know, wrestle with 10 models simultaneously and figure out which one they like for what?
Go and try these things, especially the GPT OSS. I'm still there. Even with all these new fancy models, I'm still passionate about going off and playing with a GPT OSS model, running it on my machine, being able to use it in agentic workflows, and being able to use it in a combination where I might use GPT-5 for my orchestration, I might use Claude for some code-specific tasks, and even GPT OSS for tasks where it can perform reasonably well for its size. So I think go and experiment.
Yeah, I would agree. Go experiment. And then I would say, go play with the agents. Honestly, I think the web browsing capabilities now are incredible. I really think the tool calling capabilities are incredible. So go play with that. And I think that's where it's outshining everything else.
And I will maybe also just close with a little shameless plug for some of the work that we're doing in WatsonX. So, you know, if you're interested, we've obviously always been big supporter of the open source AI space. If you'd like to use some of the GPT OSS capabilities, we have those in WatsonX today. We've also, with some of the new work that we've been doing around model gateways, we're actually making it easier and easier to bring frontier models and API keys that you have to our platform. So, you know, obviously go try these tools, use them, and, you know, check out some of the ways that hopefully we're making it easier for to consume them and some of the stuff that we're doing. So I'll just say again, Chris, Mihai, thank you for joining today. To our audience, thank you for listening. Been another exciting week in AI. And make sure, as the token podcast line goes, make sure to like and subscribe if you're a fan of the pod. And we will see you next time. Thanks, everyone.